Good morning, and welcome to Atheists Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate you tuning in this morning. Today is Sunday, September 11th, 2016. I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan, and my guest today is Dr. Rubidium, Rochelle Burks. During this live show, we welcome your phone calls to 952-946-6205 and your emails to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. A couple of years ago, Dr. Rubidium joined us on Atheists Talk to talk about using pop culture to teach adults about chemistry. This morning, she returns to the show to tell us about the DIY Science Zone at Geek Girl Con in Seattle. The DIY Science Zone uses a combination of demonstrations and hands-on activities to bring out the scientist or science enthusiast in young science fiction fans. She'll tell us what the kids can expect this October and the lengths she and others will go to in order to make a place for exploring science. Good morning, Ray, and welcome to Atheists Talk.
Good morning.
Good to have you back on the show.
Good to be back. Thank you.
So it's been a couple of years. Remind folks a little bit about your background. You are a forensic chemist by training, correct?
Yes. I'm an analytical chemist that works in forensic science. I've spent a couple of years in a crime lab, and I'm now a boring chemistry professor.
I'm guessing you're probably not a boring chemistry professor, but that's also probably not something we can prove or disprove on air.
So, I try. I aim for boring. Sometimes I make it.
So you are teaching at the college level, largely. And
yes.
For the most part, when you've been appearing at conferences, you've been doing panels that have been aimed at adult audiences. What made you decide to do something aimed at kids?
So I've been a staff member of Geek Girl Con for a little bit over 5 years. And the first year that I was a staff member, I was on the social media team, and we're downstairs in the gaming zone. The gaming zone is usually in the bottom floor of the convention center. And I'm looking around, they had a huge room where people were building games out of boxes of, like, random parts. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that looks so fun. And I said, why, you know, we should have a science zone where people can do these things. So there's lots of families and kids and adults that were just tinkering around and coming up with new stuff. And I said, well, this would be great if we had a science zone that people could do the same kind of thing and explore science and talk to scientists. And so that's kind of how the idea came together. And I knew that it would be popular with kids, especially Geek Girl Con is the kind of con, unlike some other cons, that attracts a lot of families. And that brings small children. That's not super typical with, say, something like San Diego Comic-Con or Dragon Con or something like that.
To put the DIY Science Zone in context, tell us a little bit about Geek Girl Con, because it set out as a science fiction and fantasy convention to be a little bit different and to serve a different audience, correct?
Right. So its goal is to celebrate and honor the legacy and contributions of women in science and technology, comics, arts, literature, gaming, basically all of these genres. So everyone's welcome. Every geek is welcome. It's just that we're focusing on the contributions of women in these areas. And I think also we have a lot of kind of family and kids-friendly programming. We've got a lot of teens and just a lot of whole families. Whenever, you know, I've been going to cons now there for 5 years. So whenever you are on the con floor, you see a huge number of whole families, and it's super cute to see them all in cosplay, or lots of, you know, friends are dropped off, groups of, you know, middle schoolers or teens, and their parents are like, go, be free. And then, of course, you know, the normal, what people would think would be, quote, the normal, which would be, you know, just adult fans. So it's a good mix, but it's pretty family friendly. And we also try to have a range of activities that are rated so people know, okay, this is more adult, this is more open to everybody, this is more this age and up. And so because of that, I think that you get, by design, you get a different group of folks, right, that might come to the con, that are, or wider array. I don't know about different, but a wider array of folks. And so there's lots of programming too that, again, the view and the perspective is going to be from a feminist perspective and an intersectional feminist perspective. So the programming, I think, reflects that. We always hope that the panel and the content reflect that. And then, of course, you know, if you build it, they will come. The audience reflects that. So it's definitely, I love that con. It's a great con. It's about 6,000 folks, 5,000-6,000 folks.
Which is
last year.
Really quite big for something that new.
Right. And so it's, you know, we're always hoping to grow. We're actually, this year we're expanding into an extra floor. And so the zone is actually moving to a space that's four times the size, which will be great because we've got some super big exhibits and activities that need the room. And also to make it more accessible for our attendees that are differently abled, we needed to be in a bigger space.
All right. So talking about the DIY size zone itself, you said that activities at Geek Girl Con are rated for specific, for appropriateness for specific ages, obviously. I expect it's fun enough for everybody. But is there a particular age group that you're targeting with these activities?
We're all ages. We're an all age zone. But when I'm coming up with activities or working with scientists that are coming up with activities, the goal is to make it something that you can do in 15 minutes or less, but the target is actually 5. And that not only can you do it, but can you explain it? Can you observe the experiment? Can you reach a conclusion in 5 minutes? And so with that, we do have longer ones, DNA extraction, which is always a hit and such a kind of a foundational science experiment. That one's about 15 minutes. And then a lot of, we've got a couple of new ones that are going to be a bit longer this year. But the goal is, can you do it in about 5 minutes? And also target age, we have such a real variety. We'll have, you know, wee ones as little as 3 or 4 all the way up to, you know, 75 wanting to hang out and make some tack or some slime. So, and everybody in between, and, you know, you've got kids and their guardians, you've got, you know, just groups of adults that want to get their hands dirty, you've got some fun, messy ones. And so I think part of it, too, is picking the right scientists and science educators that can adapt the depth of their approach and what they're trying to communicate to a wide variety of audiences. So that's part of it, too, is to tailor, because we can control the size at the activity station to a maximum of 6 people per scientist. The person running the activity and helping folks kind of discover the activity can tailor their approach to the people right in front of them. And so that's another reason why the scientists are more important, actually, than the activity, because they're the ones that are, you know, meeting the needs of the folks in front of them and knowing what their target audience is. And so it's really a fun area. It's not only just about the activity. It's about, you know, when you ask most people, there's been tons of surveys on this, to name a living scientist. That can be hard for some folks. Or they'll name, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, maybe. That's our new kind of go-to. But for a lot of folks, they still think that scientists look a certain way, that they do certain things. And so another thing about the zone is you're stocking it with all kinds of people that look like everybody in the room. And it's the chance, too, to interact with folks and find out, you know, what their fandom is and what kind of science they do and, you know, how much of a geek are they. And so it's also just to introduce people to, hey, this is what a scientist looks like and this is how science actually works.
And I definitely want to get into a bit on how you chose the people, the scientists, and there are some science enthusiasts as well who help out there. But for right now, you mentioned activities for kids as young as 3. What mm-hmm. can you do for a kid that young in that kind of period of time that effectively gets information about science across to them?
Well, definitely one of our go-tos is always slime and GAC, which is a type of non-Ettonian fluid where it's you take, say, Elmer's glue, and you're going to add in a little borax soap and some food coloring, and it goes from being that liquidy glue to, like, clumping up and becoming this firm, you know, you can roll it into a ball. It's a little bit bouncy. And so just to have that change in physical properties, even if somebody that small doesn't, maybe can't grasp that, they can certainly see and feel the change because it's very tactile. They're getting their hands dirty in there, which the parents love. Stick your hands in that glue, kids.
It'll be fine afterward. And,
we have lots of paper towels, so we're good. And the bathroom's right next door, so it's awesome.
Okay.
But get your hands in there and see that. We've got one, like, rose indicator that just changes color when you add some lemon juice, add some baking soda. These are, you know, some solutions that they might have around the house. And color change just by adding something else instead of having it be some, you know, big mysterious process. It's just about them seeing the difference, that they can do that. They're doing something that causes a difference.
Excellent.
And then what that difference means. And so those kinds of things are really fun.
All right. Kids. We do need to go to commercial. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how you built the DIY size zone. But for now, everybody, please stay with us through the break, and we will return to Atheist's Talk with our guest, Dr. Rubidium. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is Atheists Talk, and I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan. This is a live show, and we welcome questions at 952-946-6205 or emailed to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. Atheists Talk is an unusual show. Very few places in the U.S. can someone randomly turn on commercial radio and hear a bunch of atheists talking about topics that interest them. Increasing our visibility this way does have costs, however, and we need your help. We'd like to thank Jean and Anita for their recent donations, and if you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to our radio fund, please visit minnesotaatheists.org. Today's guest is Dr. Rubidium, Rachel Burks. Welcome back, Ray.
Hello.
So we were going to talk about how you put the DIY Sci Zone together, or Science Zone, depending on whether you're looking at Twitter with its character limits, which I usually am. So, but you mentioned a couple of times as we were talking about this a little bit in the last segment, you were talking about looking like the people around there. And I know that you have put in a great deal of work right up front to model the diversity that you would like to see in future scientists. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. So I think that, you know, part of the, sometimes when you hear research about, oh, draw a scientist or name a scientist, sometimes folks, it's, you know, old white man with crazy hair. And, you know, we got a lot of younger people of color with crazy hair, like myself.
You're a natural.
I wanted to reflect. Huh?
You're a natural fit.
Yes. It's, you know, just a few small changes. But I wanted to reflect the scientists that I knew. And put them at the forefront of having them interact with folks. And I think that part of it is, you know, people want to, as I've said a couple of times, people want to see themselves in their dreams. And even if their dream isn't to be a scientist, I also think it's important that people see that the diversity of the field is not just by discipline, it's by the people that do the job. And so I always aim to have, you know, a diverse representation in the group of not only discipline, but also the folks that do that job, which is easy. Luckily, it's easy for me to do because I am a scientist of color, but also a lot of the folks that I know from both, you know, interacting with them in outreach and education spaces or social media might have been when we first met are also, you know, underrepresented individuals to that are just have the spirit of inclusiveness that adhere to the mission and values of Geek Girl Con, which is to be an inclusive space for everyone. And that also needs to come through and behave. Science is ultimately a human endeavor. And that needs to come through is how we're doing that and the people that we have and what our mission and goal is. And so I always try to stock it full of folks that believe that and operate in that way. Lots of names that definitely, if you're on science Twitter, you'll recognize, like Dr. Danielle Lee, who's a mammalogist and an ecologist. So she'll be back this year, which is great. We've also got folks like Matthew Francis, who's a physicist. We've got Nicole Gallucci, both Dr. Francis and Dr. Gallucci. Dr. Gallucci is an astronomer. But we want to see the diversity of folks in our field. And I want people to see that of all ages, that these are actually what scientists look like. And this is how we do science.
And since you're dealing with kids, you're dealing with people who aren't necessarily terribly diplomatic. Well, you're going to get some of the
adults,
most,
Stephanie.
Well, this is true, but kids are often not even aware that perhaps they should be trying. Do you get kids really showing their surprise that this is what the scientists they're interacting with look like?
No. No, I think that's the funny thing is that we don't. And I think anything, it's the grown up sometimes. And I only say that rarely because I think that because of the way that the con has been set up, if you're attending Geek Girl Con, you're likely already in a certain mindset, and adhere to certain kind of belief systems. And so we don't really get that from kids. If anything, it's not shock. It's like happiness. Yay! This is a real physicist. Like, I've never seen somebody so happy to meet a chemist or a physicist or, you know, an ecologist than a 5-year-old. And sometimes you're like, I'm not sure you know what that means, but I'm enthused that you're enthused. And so that part is really fun. I think sometimes it's, you know, a couple of times it's been really, it's the adults that are like, really, you're a blah, 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 fill in the blank. And so I think the kids see, you know, a certain wonder and they're just so excited and happy. But that's more the emotion that I see.
And this has got to be pretty nice for your scientists too, because frankly, this kind of reaction is not what scientists are necessarily getting in society these days. Yay, you're a scientist.
And I think, you know, more than once you have people that have been, you know, this is the fourth time we're doing the zone. We've got a lot of repeat scientists. And oftentimes the thing I hear is this is one of the highlights of my year because you have people that are excited to be there that are, you know, a lot of us are teachers and some of our students are excited to be in the classroom, but let's face it, not all the time. And so to see that kind of enthusiasm and excitement and to see it in so many kids so rapidly, that I think that's kind of the fun part is to see that kind of unbridled enthusiasm from a big range, mostly little kids, but also we get a lot of adults and teens. That's really, it makes you feel good. Like, I've really accomplished something today. This person was so impressed by some glue coming together. I don't and so that can be really, it can kind of sustain you and give you, you know, some fuel for the journey moving forward.
And do you have a decent sense of how many kids the DIY Science Zone interacts with each year?
We typically see over, so we're open Saturday from 9:30 to 6 and from Sunday from 9:30 to 2. And we're typically going to see about 500 people in that time span. And so last year was a bit bigger. And so, We saw probably about 600. And this year we're in a bigger space, so we could potentially see even more, which is really phenomenal when you think about it, because on average, people are spending, you know, at least 5 minutes at the station. And so folks are getting a lot of one-on-one time, which is great.
Excellent. All right. And when we come back after this commercial break, we will talk about a little bit about what you go through to make this happen every year. So everybody, please stay with us through the break, and we will return to Atheists Talk with our guest, Dr. Rubidium. This is Stephanie Savan, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to Atheists Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm your host, Stephanie Savan. Atheists Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, American Atheists, Farmers Insurance Agent Georgia Hancock Tsoi, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@minnesotaatheists.org. The music for our show is composed by member Brent Michael Davids. If you have a question or comment on today's show, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. Dr. Rubidium, forensic chemist Rachel Burks, is talking with us this morning about Geek Girl Con's DIY Science Zone. So when I mentioned as we were going to commercial that we'd be talking in the segment about what you go through to put this on, you laughed. Why did you laugh?
Yes. Well, I mean, I laugh because I'm not thinking about the administrative things that one does and all the parts and has to juggle. I'm thinking about our acts of whimsy. So when we hit certain fundraising thresholds or to motivate people to donate, lots of the zone scientists, myself included, will do wacky things.
Back a step. So the DIY Science Zone is not, for example, funded by Geek Girl Con itself. It's not funded by ticket sales. This is something that you raise money for to add to the convention, correct?
Yes. So we're completely self-sufficient. We raise money not only to buy all of the supplies, but also to assist with travel support for our experts.
Excellent. So
it's expensive.
What is your funding goal for this year, for example?
Our goal is $6,000, which we will use, of course, to order supplies. And then we have a way that we do travel support where all the folks that need, say, a hotel room, we offer a couple of them and people share. And then we also will assist with either train or carpooling funds or airfare for our experts. And then, probably at least, I'd have to say, especially depends on the year, but we make a substantial investment in supplies and activities.
Okay.
So it's split between both.
And we will come back to this again at the end of this segment, but for right now, folks who are interested in this, how do they donate?
So if you go to either the page advertising this show or to GeekGirlCon, you can just go to the donation of DIY Science Zone, or you could just Google DIY Science Zone Geek Girl Con, and a donation page will come up. It's a secure PayPal activity. Or if you're on Twitter, our hashtag is hashtag DIY Sci Zone, and you'll find me usually hustling for donations. And so it's a really easy form that you fill out so that we can thank you if you want to. If you're going to be at the con, you're going to get a great button. But you can, and I really want to stress too that any amount, most of the time our donors are donating, $10 is really popular, $20 is really popular. And that is really helpful. We get a lot of small donations, which still get us all the things that we need to run this con. So if you're thinking that, I only have $5 or $10, we will take your $5 or $10 and do something awesome with it.
And that will introduce or help get one kid really enthusiastic about science. So,
absolutely.
All right. So, acts of whimsy. You will do certain things for your donors. What kinds of things are you making very staid, dignified scientists do?
So usually it's a certain dollar mark. So say M.R. Francis had to dress up in his Cookie Monster t-shirt and eat a cookie in public and take a picture of that. So he did that. And I wore an octopus hat to work. We've got other folks that are going to record songs or play certain video games, or one of our volunteers watched Battlefield Earth, which has to be one of the worst movies ever made, and live tweeted it. So we get to, you know, if you donate money, not only are you supporting STEM, but you get to torture us. And so that's a benefit. And for the last few years, I've always listened to some atrociously bad album. And so this year, people voted that I would listen to Paris Hilton's 2006 album, which I have done. And so it's just, you know, whimsical, fun stuff that folks will do to kind of, you know, thank our donors and also hopefully encourage folks that I just want to see someone have to do this. So let me give $5.
And does torturing scientists really seem to motivate people?
It does, especially the first year when everyone who follows me on Twitter knows that I have a special hatred for Nickelback. and so the first year, that was the album. And not only did I listen to one, I listened to a whole album when we hit every, you know, $1,000, let's say. And so that really seemed to motivate some folks to to donate money. And then you had the camp that was like, there became a camp of no MB and the camp of yes MB. So people would donate, they'd mark it. This is for, she doesn't have to listen to Nickelback. And then this was a camp that you do have to listen to Nickelback. And so that was kind of fun to see that kind of. And Paris Hilton album was another one. That was...
I do have to say, you should have seen the look on our engineer's face when you said that you would listen to Paris Hilton this year.
The whole thing, by the way.
Was it really as bad as you thought?
I scoped it, too, because I figure if I'm going to share this with you people. Right? If you're really, but I got to share the wealth. But, yeah, so I think it's just fun that to help people, you know, what we're willing to do to hopefully fund this, what we think is a great outreach effort. And have a bit of silliness. We have a lot of people dressing up and going to work. So if you work with scientists in the zone, don't be surprised if you turn around the corner and they're dressed as Professor Snipe, which is coming up. Somebody's going to be doing that this week.
And this work doesn't end with just fundraising either. You mentioned that the DIY SciZone itself runs a full day on Saturday at GeekGirlCon. Speaking of which, what are the dates of GeekGirlCon this year?
This year it's October 8th and 9th. And so I'll be setting up on the 7th. So that's, we do kind of fun experiments. We do a lot of fun experiments. And the funnest experiments, of course, are the biggest mess. so 7th will be an all-day setup, unpack, get all the experiment zones ready. And so that'll be an all-day project for Friday on load-in day. It looks a bit like a scene from Dexter because the entire place is going to be coated with plastic. And so there'll be that fun part. And then, of course, there's the running of the activity, which is usually there's also set up. There's the whole day folks are there. There's at least an hour or two afterwards of cleanup and prepping for the next day. And then Saturday, and then, you know, setting up that and getting it running. And then the entire thing has to be broken down and packed up.
And
clean. And then inventory done. So there's all the admin stuff. That's not the fun part.
So you mentioned a couple of activities. You mentioned the glue that turns all rubbery. And you mentioned, well, actually, tell people what's involved in a DNA extraction, because I don't think this is something that a lot of people have gotten to do.
This one is a lot of fun, and you can do it with strawberries. Oftentimes people do it with strawberries because it's haploid. There's 8 copies of the DNA, so it's a lot of it, so you can see it. And really you can do it all with household products, and you want to buy, like, clear soap, or you're going to do some, you know, first aid alcohol isopropanol. Probably use some salt or some meat tenderizer. And the fun part is, we also try to pick activities that if people wanted to do it again at home, that the directions or the activity is easily available for them to recreate at home, and it's inexpensive and the ingredients are easy to get. And so really what you do with that one is another fun, messy one, because you put some strawberries in a Ziploc bag and you tell folks just to destroy it, just smash it to bits. You really want to get, pulverize the strawberry. And then you're going to add in some salty soap stuff and start, kind of breaking down things, and you're going to filter it with a coffee filter. So it's a multi-step one, which is actually fun because you see it happening in steps. It's highly visual, it's this beautiful color. And definitely when you get to the part, you've added in the alcohol and you see the big strands of DNA. And to be technically correct, it also has RNA and a bit of proteins that are always naturally kind of wrapped around there. And you see it come out in this big white clump. And it's so, visual that it's like, ooh, it's like a magic trick, but better because it's science. So that one, it smells great because, it's strawberries and everything. So that one's a really fun one, nice and messy. We've got bugs this year, which is fantastic. Got some really fun insects. We've got a couple entomologists coming and they're bringing creatures with them. I'm sure that they would be horrified if they, heard me calling them creatures or bugs, critters, but crawly, creepy things. I think
creatures
at
least doesn't have a technical definition, so you're probably better off with that than with bugs.
Yes, I know. And that's the fun part, too, for the scientists, is meeting other experts and realizing the thing that you've been calling an insect isn't. You're like, oh, okay. So we'll have some fun with that. We've got the Pacific Science Center, which is in Seattle, is going to come in and do a really fun activity where people get to kind of build and design and test out wind machines.
Ooh.
So that'll be really fun. And we've got one that's going to be a bit creepy with zombies. You can't go wrong with zombies, but it's really also, it's a statistics one. Would you statistically be able to dodge a zombie attack? And what are your chances? And we're going to be using a game called Zombie Dice, which has been featured on Will Wheaton's tabletop, to kind of demonstrate that. So that one's going to be fun. So we've got a real big diversity of ones. We've also got one that'll be, people will make race and make rockets using stone canisters and Alka-Seltzer. So it's a lot of variety of activities, and lots of good fun and lots of bangs and sounds and sliminess, which I love. I hope the kids love it too.
Excellent. Well, we are just about out of time. So as promised, please tell people again how they can donate to the DIY SciZone.
So probably the fastest way would be go ahead and go onto the GeekGirlCon website and go to the DIY Science Zone donation page. It'll be really easy to find once you get there. And any amount helps. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you again, Ray.
Thanks, Stephanie.
And I'd also like to thank our audience for tuning in to Atheists Talk. This is Stephanie Zavan, your host. Join us again next Sunday when we'll be talking with cartoonist Dale DeBaxi. Right now, stay tuned for American Atheists Viewpoint. I'm proud to be on the air with Minnesota Atheists, and I hope that you appreciate the show. This show depends on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and our donors. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at minnesotaatheists.org. This is Atheists Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The podcast for the show will be on our radio page later today. Have a nice Sunday.
Hello and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, September 11th, 2016. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you, as always, for joining us. This week, I think it's really important for us to talk about something that was in the news that came out of New Hampshire, where Ohio's governor, John Kasich, who is a former presidential candidate for the Republican nomination, was campaigning for Chris Sununu, who is running for governor of New Hampshire. And at a campaign stop, out there in New Hampshire, Governor Kasich, for some reason, decided to make an unprompted comment about actor Daniel Radcliffe's atheism, saying that it was a really weird thing that he was an atheist. Take a listen to this.
You know, it's amazing to me. You know that Daniel Radcliffe has declared himself an atheist? I'm serious. What a weird thing. Why would a guy that had all that success just... I mean, what the hell's wrong with him? Become declared an atheist. I mean, I don't know why you would even say that. But anyway, he's an odd guy, isn't he? He's not really gone... He's not really taken off, has he?
So, I mean, it really shouldn't be a difficult thing for us to just come out and say immediately, to state the obvious, that there is nothing wrong with being an atheist. There's nothing wrong with coming out and saying that you're an atheist. In fact, we certainly wish that more people would do it. But this whole thing is just so bizarre. I don't understand why a governor, why a person who is supposed to represent all of the people in his state would come out and say something like this, say that a person declaring themselves to be an atheist is somehow responsible for them having a bad career, which, setting aside the fact that I don't think it's accurate that Daniel Radcliffe has had a bad career. The problem here, I think, goes back to maybe the fact that Governor Kasich thinks he doesn't know any atheists. He thinks that there aren't any atheists on his staff, that nobody he works with is an atheist, that no one he knows is an atheist, when it's most likely true, it's most likely the case that that's not accurate. We know that in Ohio, something like 22% of Ohioans are non-religious, anywhere between, you know, depending on how you ask the question, anywhere between 5 and 10% of people don't believe in God. So it's not like we're not out there. It's not like amongst his staff there are not people who don't believe in God. The other thing that's really interesting is that he would say this in New Hampshire, which is actually one of the least religious states in the country, where something like 36% of New Hampshire adults are non-religious. I mean, they have one of the highest rates of anything. I think it's the second highest non-religious percentage in the country. So it just doesn't make any sense. It's a really nonsensical, ineffective way of winning support from people to disparage them for being non-religious. So, you know, I think part of this is that it goes back to that idea that John Kasich thinks he doesn't know any atheists, which, taking it even a step further back, is about people in John Kasich's life not being open and honest about what they believe and don't believe. So, to that end, one of the things that we did in an effort to maybe turn this into some sort of learning experience, because I think it is important for politicians to know exactly who they're representing. We've challenged Governor Kasich, and we sent him an open letter as well as an actual letter, as well as an email contact form. We're trying to reach out in any way we can to arrange a sit-down meeting with folks in Ohio who are atheists, a meeting between them and Governor Kasich. I think that this boils down to him not understanding, as a Catholic, or, you know, just generically as a Christian, not understanding how somebody could come out and say, you know what, I don't believe in any of this stuff, and I think it's a little ridiculous. Daniel Radcliffe and many of us are not shy about our lack of beliefs, and I think that his perception of somebody who isn't religious or is an atheist, his perception of that is that we just kind of keep it to ourselves and we don't go around sharing it because it is something to be ashamed of, or it's something that's, you know, tawdry in some way. And that's just, that shouldn't be the case, and any more than it should be the case that people should be ashamed of, you know, being Jewish or being Buddhist or whatever. I can't imagine for the life of me Governor Kasich taking issue with an actor or any public figure coming out and saying that they were Jewish or that they were a Buddhist or that they were a Muslim. Governor Kasich is one of the people who most forcefully denounced Donald Trump's attempts to use sort of a religious test to determine immigration policies when it came to admitting or not Muslims. And so the fact that he kind of carelessly just said this, I think, speaks to a lack of understanding and a lack of acknowledged exposure, let's call it. So, this is something that we need to do better as a community. This is something that we need to take the opportunity to reach out to politicians who we may not agree on or agree with on lots of issues, but reach out to them and say, you know what, hi, I'm an atheist. Here are the things that concern me about government. Here are the things that I care about. Here's why I want to be involved. Here's why I care about this stuff. That's a very powerful thing. And, you know, those of us who are in a position to be vocal and be open and be upfront about what we believe and don't believe, we're in the sort of best position to make it easier for the next group of people. We're the people who can get out there, and by using the word atheist, by meeting with our elected officials, we can hopefully make that path easier for the next generation and make it so that a politician doesn't feel that it's appropriate or that it's right or that it's acceptable in any way to say, wow, that group of people, they sure are weird, aren't they? And that's what we need to fight back against. That's what we have to push against. In Ohio, American Atheists has five different affiliates, including one that's in the sort of based in Kentucky, but is Tri-State Freethinkers. So we have tons and tons and tons of members. We're talking something in the area of 1,000 different members and donors in Ohio. We have no shortage of people who would love to meet with Governor Kasich and talk about this stuff. So we're really, really hopeful that the governor follows through on this, that he uses this as a learning experience, and that he is willing to reach out and better represent all of the people that make up his constituency. There are millions of people in Ohio, and 20 or 25% of them are non-religious, and 10% of them are atheists and don't believe in God. So we're not talking some small number here. We're talking about a huge number of people that Governor Kasich really needs to do a better job of reaching out to. And just to state the obvious here, this also isn't a problem that's unique to Governor Kasich. We saw this in the discussions from the Democratic National Committee staffers contemplating using Bernie Sanders' perceived atheism as a tool to undermine him. So, you know, this is something we have to fight on all fronts. This is something that we absolutely have to confront when we see it, and that's why we're confronting it now. I'm hopeful that this can lead to something positive and that this is there's a way forward here. But that's all we have time for this week. Thank you, as always, for joining us for the American Atheist Viewpoint. For more information about our work or to become a member, please visit www.atheists.org. Thank you all very much, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.